Good to go. We are live. Alexander, how are you doing this evening?
Very well. I'm just back from a holiday in the Peak District National Park in England, which is one of our most beautiful parts of England. It's extraordinarily historic. It's got mountains and lakes. Well, we call them mountains, hills we call them in most places. But anyway, it's richly forested. It's wonderful for walking country. And I feel invigorated and excited to be back doing programs like this.
All right, great. And I think we have Spartan Warrior Queen with us as well tonight. How are you doing, Spartan Warrior Queen, moderating? Thank you very much for your help, for moderating. Can you guys hear me? All right. Let me know if you heard Alexander. Let me know. You're saying that Duran is muted.
No.
Do you guys hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear me? Can you hear us? Yeah.
Let's see. I'm waiting here for confirmation that they can hear us. I don't think we're muted.
No, well, we can hear each other.
Ah, okay. No, sorry. The direct level. Okay. All right. So you guys can hear me. All right. Just let me know in the live stream. Yeah, all good. All right. Great. All good. All right, Alexander. Let's see where people are joining us from, and then we'll just get right into what should be a really interesting live stream. I'm really looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this, Alexander, because I've been saying this for a while, that a lot of what we're seeing happening in the U.S. is definitely reminiscent of what happened in 1917, maybe earlier in 1917, Russia, all the way through the Civil War, and also reminiscent of what happened in Mao's China as well. So I think we can draw a lot of comparisons, historical comparisons. Not that the U.S. is at that stage just yet. It's probably in the very, very beginnings of what could be a very dangerous and very destructive Marxist, Bolshevik type of revolution that's being waged against the United States of America, a country that I was born in, that I grew up in, that I owe so much of who I am to. And that is one of the reasons that we do what we do is because we love America and we want to see America prosper. And it pains us to see what's happening in the U.S. It really does. So we will fight to the best of our ability to make sure that the forces of evil do not win. So with that said, Alexander, let me see where people are joining us from. On Alert 24/7 says Galispera from Netherlands. Hello, Netherlands. From the UK, from Fort Lauderdale, from Oklahoma, from the great country of Sweden, from Naples, Italy. Let's see, from Thames, UK, Antwerp, Belgium. Bezmenov in color. Yes, Bezmenov. Great videos from him. He saw all of this coming. He saw all of this coming. Let's see where else people are joining us from. Shropshire, UK, from Fort Hood, Texas, from Bulgaria. Awesome. Awesome. That is a Bulgarian artist's painting behind me. By the way, from Glasgow, Scotland, from Belfast, Nottingham, Manchester, Malta, Scotland again, Romania. I love Romania. One of my favorite countries. From Latvia, from China, Slovenia, Texas, Germany, Hawaii, Poland. Hello to everyone in Poland. Great country as well. From Alaska, Preston, UK, Estonia, Denmark. All right. Arizona, my former home. All right, Alexander, we have a lot of people from all over the world waiting to hear what you have to say about what's going on with the recent escalation in violence. The most recent news that we have is that there was a man executed in Portland. Guys, we will be careful with some of the words that we use.
Yes.
Because the people at YouTube, the higher up execs at YouTube, do keep a watchful eye over the language that we use. So please forgive us if we use some creative language or if we tone down some of our language as we explain these stories. We want this video to stay up on YouTube because we think that what we have to say should be helpful and should be entertaining and informative.
So, informative, certainly, and educational. I mean, I don't want to. I mean, obviously, we're not an education program, but I mean, to come to what Alex was saying, obviously there are profound differences. Nobody's suggesting that the United States of today is the same as, you know, Tsarist Russia was in the 19th and early 20th century, or that China was when Mao came to power. But there are also some very remarkable and very disturbing resemblances. Now, the two things which I think, firstly, I would point out. One is that amongst an element of what the Russians like to call the intelligentsia, amongst the young people especially, there is a growing impulse towards extreme political militancy and what's called direct action and uncompromising behavior, and a culture of violence which is beginning to sort of spread and embed themselves. And you could find that, and I think perhaps before I proceed further, I would say that the Russian Revolution is not just in 1917. It's a process that's building up over a very long time. But you can start to see expressions of that in Russian literature. So you have people like Chernyshevsky, for example, and Dobrolyubov, who are talking about, you know, the fact that, to quote them, a famous quote that Chernyshevsky once made, the worse things are, the better, the more disruption, the more violence, because that's the way we're going to bring down this rotten system in which everything that exists has to be completely wiped out, and we need to start again because the past is all corrupt and what, you know, and all traditions, all history, we need to restart from the beginning. So that was one sort of aspect of this. There's also an aspect that in order to achieve this kind of revolutionary change, you need a culture of violence to carry it through. And that means ultimately it evolves into an acceptance of political violence and terrorism. And if you want to find a book that analyzes that mentality very well, it is perhaps Dostoevsky's novel Demons, which is all about a group of young people in a provincial town who basically set up some kind of strange revolutionary group, and it is all about violence and terror that they are promoting, and it shows how utterly demonic, I mean, that's his own language, this whole process and force has become, and how it's all about erasing traditions. So there is this aspect which I think, if you look at some of these people who are rioting and protesting in the United States, especially protesting, and you also see some of these people in the media writing about this, you can see parallels with those mentalities. But there is another one, which is that especially in Russia, in the lead up to the revolution, you saw also that a powerful element of the political class, people who were liberal, looked at all of this and thought they could manipulate it. And they thought they could exploit people like this, and that they could use young people and, you know, people who had become drawn into these strange ideas, these violent ideas, and that they could be used to try to force concessions from the Tsar and from the Tsarist government in order to bring them to power. Now, the people I'm talking about would classify themselves and would be classified today as political liberals. And they tried to ride this tiger. And when, of course, the revolution eventually came, they found that though they thought they could control these forces that had been let loose in their society, they were unable to do so, and they were completely swept aside. And what happened as a result was a violent revolutionary change and the establishment, in effect, of a totalitarian system. So it was a complete miscalculation by the liberals that they thought that they could control these forces, and at the same time, these forces themselves, there are striking parallels with some of the language, some of the violence, some of the culture of violence that you see in the United States today. So I think that those parallels do exist. There's both, if you like, the proto-Bolsheviks. I don't think they're yet organized in a kind of political force like the Bolshevik Party eventually became, but there's a kind of proto-Bolsheviks there. And there's also the liberals who think they can manipulate them and don't understand many aspects of their own philosophy, like the importance of the rule of law, for example, the importance of political compromise, of, working with forces in a stable way in order to carry out incremental change. Now, we never once have assumed or thought that things like this could happen in the United States. It is quite dismaying, because I studied Russian history at university. It is quite dismaying to see all these same elements reproduce themselves in the United States, such a profoundly different society from the society that Russia was. And one has to wonder again whether there aren't psychological pathologies that are behind it too. I'm also going to finally finish by sort of saying that there's a language, there's a culture of language which is connected to the culture of violence, and there is also a general idea about culture. One of the things that happened after the Russian Revolution was that there was a very powerful urge on the part of these people, who were never, by the way, the majority of the population, but they were the ones who, after the revolution, had power or thought they had power. They wanted to completely obliterate everything about the old culture that had existed before. And that meant, blowing up churches and monuments, and establishing an entirely new form of culture, which reflected their own ideologies and ideas as the one that would replace the traditional culture that the Russian people had. And that cultural element was even stronger in Mao's China, where he was even more clear-cut that he and the people around him wanted to destroy everything about the traditional China that had existed before Mao came to power. I mean, he even talked about the four olds, the four aspects of Chinese culture that, that had existed before, that he wanted to destroy. And you had the Red Guards, these young people who were in the universities, who were basically carrying out violence not entirely dissimilar to the kind of violence we're seeing now, and a kind of ideological imposition of ideas which bears rather disturbing resemblances to some of the woke culture ideas and the way those being imposed that we see today. So that's rather a loose introduction, but perhaps we have much more to say.
Yeah, let's get deeper into it, Alexander. Mm-hmm. As I was saying before, there was a man that was executed in Portland, and it really was an execution style killing. He was wearing a blue Lives Matter patch insignia, I believe, on his right or left leg. He also had a hat from a group, the Patriot Prayer Group, which is a Christian pro-police group that he was a part of. And he was just walking down the street, and he was just literally shot in cold blood. Yes. I mean, for no reason, just killed, bam, that was it. Yes. Now, this past week, what we've seen is, if you just reflect on the past 1 week of violence, things are escalating at a very scary pace. Yes. I mean, we had what happened to Rand Paul. Mm. We had the riots in Kenosha. We had the situation with the young 17-year-old gentleman, Kyle, and what happened there. We had the other day videos of these Antifa, BLM. I mean, they're all white kids, so I don't know what to make of it, but they're going to restaurants and they're trying to force people to put up their fist. If they don't put up their fist, then I think they're violently attacking them. I mean, they may not be actually hitting them at this point.
Yes.
But what they're doing is violent. We also have BLM protesters and Antifa actually riding out to the suburbs now with bullhorns and telling people to wake up and telling people to get out of their homes and saying that these homes are not yours. And this has all happened literally within a 1 week time span, which has led now today to this execution on the street.
Yes.
We also have Alexander, people like Bernie Sanders, AOC, Ayanna Presley, and Kamala Harris, who have been telling these people to continue to get on the street.
Yes.
We haven't really seen the Democrats, even Joe Biden, to be honest, we haven't seen the Democrats, you know, try to calm things down or to tell people, stop this madness. We really have not seen that. We have to be honest here. And it goes back to the point that you make, and I would like you to expand on that. To me, it seems that the Democrats, not only Democrats, actually Democrats, maybe neocons, maybe some rhino Republicans, maybe very wealthy oligarchs and very wealthy corporations, they're all trying to see if they can control this BLM, Antifa mob, these rioters, in order to usher in their perception of this utopia. If it's the Jeff Bezos, Zuckerberg types, maybe it's a utopia where they own everything of the United States and control all the production, manufacturing, all the money, everything. If it's, you know, the Nancy Pelosi's, obviously they're looking at the neoliberal agenda and they're looking to seize power. AOC has some other ridiculous wild fantasies in her head, and Bernie Sanders. But all these forces have been unleashed, and they've now gone out of control. And I don't think anyone can now, you know, put the genie back in the bottle as far as these mobs and these rioters are concerned. The same type of thing happened in 1917, as you mentioned. These forces of evil were unleashed in Russia, and a tsunami of violence took hold, and which actually did lead to a real civil war. A lot of people think that it was 1917 and it just ended. We actually had a 4 or 5 year civil war that broke out to fight for the future of Russia. And we know the results of that. So all the things that I said, Alexander, what do you make of it?
Well, first of all, I think the even most disturbing thing about the event in Portland is not just that somebody was killed, but that there were people who were involved, well, maybe not directly involved, but that there are people who are celebrating the fact. I mean, this is again, a striking parallel to some of the things that happened in the run-up to the Russian Revolution, in the sense that you had people who were killed, and the fact that people were being killed was being celebrated by others, by people, not just the, you know, the perpetrators themselves, but people who were, you know, involved with or in league with or part of the same ideological groups as the perpetrators. And that legitimizes and embeds a culture of political violence. It means that the there is a breakdown of order, but not just of order, but of basic morality, because of course at this point life loses its sacred quality. It becomes expendable. People are killed, and this is somehow something that's actually glorified. You can even find early Soviet novels which actually talk in this way, that, you know, sort of carrying an execution is somehow a holy act. It seems extraordinary. But when I see things like this in Portland, you know, and people talking in this way and bragging about it and saying that, you know, they're happy that this person was killed, a person they don't even know, who might as more than likely was just there. You're absolutely right. When that happens, that is extremely disturbing. And of course, violence has its gains, its own momentum. There was obviously the revolution. There was the civil war which followed, which was a terrible civil war. And then, of course, there was a long period of escalating terror that followed all the way up, right up through the terror of the Stalinist era, and which only eventually started to recede after the Second World War, after Stalin's death. So if you get a culture of terror and of violence and of celebration of political violence, that can become very embedded. And if it gains hold in society, it is extremely difficult to change that. But I think the other thing is, and I think this is perhaps where you're even more, the parallels become even more striking, is you mentioned the Democrats And you're absolutely right. I've heard absolutely nothing from Joe Biden about this. He's not come out and said, you know, this is absolutely unacceptable. We're Americans. All of us are Americans. Every life is important. Every life is important. We mustn't see violence like this in US cities. Well, you know, I, as you know, the leader, in effect, of the Democratic Party, oppose this. And instead of that, we see silence from Biden, support from some Democrats, increasingly, you know, vocal support from some Democrats, and extraordinary apologias from the Democrats supporting liberal media. If you went, if you transported back to Russia and you went there in, say, about 1910, you'd have found exactly the same thing. There were young people at that time carrying out terrorist attacks in all sorts of places up and down the Russian Empire. And most of the media in Russia, surprising though it may seem to many people, in the 19th and early 20th century, was controlled by liberals. And they celebrated these things. They supported them. They too used to come up with bizarre euphemisms about, you know, the mainly peaceful protesters who carry out all of these riots. You find extraordinary resemblances there. And again, Alex, you were talking about oligarchs and these powerful people who think they can fund these processes and keep them under some kind of control. Again, exactly the same thing happened in Russia. I remember once, while I was in Moscow, going to an extraordinary and beautiful and very elaborate palace in Moscow, and it was the home of a very famous Russian businessman called Morozov. And Morozov was, in fact, the man who was at the time bankrolling the Bolshevik Party. He was actually bankrolling Lenin. This is not, by the way, you know, this is absolutely well-known and acknowledged history. This is before the First World War, before the Russian Revolution. Again, because he thought he could control these forces, and he was allied with the liberals in the political system, and they thought that if they could stir up trouble and violence, and they could use all that to leverage concessions from the Tsar and perhaps ultimately replace him entirely, always imagining that when that happened, it would be they who would take over. I mean, you can still see, you can still find the houses of these people. There's another, there's a Russian banker called Ryabushinsky, who was doing much the same thing with other revolutionary groups at this time. And of course, what happened in 1917 was that they found that they couldn't control these processes, that a culture of violence had taken hold, that law and order had broken down, that the police had become completely demoralized, and that the army was mutinying. And they found that all those levers of control that they thought they had no longer worked anymore. And the economy was also breaking down, and the financial system, and that their money didn't actually mean very much either. So you see again all these striking parallels between the situation then and the situation now. I don't want to, as I said, overstate this. There are also huge differences, but the parallels do strike one.
Yeah, absolutely. There are massive differences. We understand that, but we are trying to navigate this situation, and I think there are some historical lessons to be learned.
Absolutely. Can I just quickly also add, I mean, this should serve as a warning, and a warning to people in the United States. I mean, you know, there are lots of things wrong in Russia. There are lots of things wrong in the United States. Just the United States need or want a revolution. I mean, I can't see how it possibly can. I mean, it would be a disaster for the United States if it went down that road. And if you look at Russia, well, of course, it did have a revolution.
Yeah, we all know the results of that. By the way, Alexander, a lot of people are saying happy name day, Hronya Bola, to you.
Thank you, Alexander.
So happy name day, Alexander. Let me draw another two parallels here. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the media, and I want you to comment on this because I think this is interesting stuff. The media tried to demonize, humiliate, really tried to humiliate the Tsar and his family, Tsar Nicholas, and his family, especially with regards to Rasputin and Rasputin's relationship with the Tsar's wife, the Tsarina, and the Tsar's family. The media really assaulted the Tsar and his family because, as you said, the media also wanted the Tsar out. And they would do it with flyers and misinformation and gossip and all kinds of tactics. They did that and they succeeded because a lot of people started to have doubts about the Tsar and whether he was capable of leading the country. Now, my second question to you, I want you to reflect on that and give us your comments, because the Rasputin angle is also very interesting, and the way they tried to humiliate the Tsar and his family is very interesting, and they eventually succeeded. But my second question to you is that we're having an election in November. I've said it, and you've said it, and we both have maybe the same reasons, but also maybe different reasons why we feel Trump has to win in November. If Trump does not win, in my opinion, the U.S. is in big trouble. I mean, I really think that a Trump victory is absolutely necessary in order to save the U.S. and to prevent it from sliding into the abyss. You kind of had the same situation in 1917 or with the Tsar as well, because I think to myself, the way they deposed the Tsar and they got him to abdicate the throne was very devious, but they did it. And I think, what if the Tsar did not listen to his advisors and did not listen to the misinformation and did not abdicate? We'd probably have a very different Russia, I think. Can you reflect on the two points that I made?
Lots of things to say here. First of all, I mean, let's make one obvious parallel. I mean, one of the points about the Tsar during the First World War, I mean, you know, Russia was in an existential crisis because it was, of course, involved in a war with Germany. Now, the Tsar's wife was German and she had a relationship with Rasputin, but she was actually, well, not a sexual relationship, but I mean, you know, she had this connection to Rasputin, who was her confessor and advisor and whatever. But the point was, what really caused a huge amount of damage was that a story was spread, and it gained enormous traction, that Alexandra, the emperor's wife, the Tsar's wife, was pro-German, and that Rasputin and the empress, were in league with the enemy power. Does that sound familiar? Exactly. I mean, you know, that it was that. So, and this caused enormous amount of demoralization because, of course, though there was not a scintilla of evidence for this. In fact, Nicholas himself was a deeply patriotic man, absolutely committed to victory against Germany. Lots of people believed this. And every time anything went wrong, this was not because, you know, in war things sometimes do go wrong. It was all because of these dark forces, as they were called, you know, that these pro-German forces around the emperor and the court that were constantly plotting to help the Germans win. And there was an extraordinary speech that happened in the Duma, the Russian parliament, by a Russian politician called Miliukov, in which he actually straightforwardly accused the Tsar of treason. He said, you know, all these things are going wrong. You know, is this folly, to use his word, is this folly or is this treason? And of course, he really meant that it was treason. Again, as I said, is this all familiar? I mean, does this remind you of some people, you know, Pelosi, maybe Schiff? Trump is somehow in league with the enemy. And this caused tremendous demoralization. Now, Nicholas, it was not a man without fault, and he was easily manipulated by many people around him, and he was pushed into abdication, which perhaps because the protests in St. Petersburg and Petrograd at that point were still only confined to that city, and it's far from clear that the military would not have backed him and that most of the population wouldn't have backed him if he'd wanted to hold on. But there's another actually extraordinary aspect about this, because I was talking about the collapse of any belief in Russia in constitution, in law, in due process, and all these things. When Nicholas was persuaded against his wishes to abdicate, he said, look, who takes over from me? I mean, if I go, who will step in? Do you want me to appoint a provisional government? And the Liberals, who were the people who were pressing him to resign, said, no, we don't want you to promote because we're going to appoint it ourselves. He said, very well, do you want me to recall the parliament? Because the parliament was at that time adjourned. Oh, no, we don't want you to recall the parliament. The reason they didn't want him to recall the parliament because the parliament actually had a conservative majority. So they didn't want it recalled. So they didn't want that either. So would it be then, because, you know, he's going to abdicate on his own behalf? Will it be his son? Well, no, we don't want the son either to take over because we don't want any kind of monarchy at all. So the result was, Nicholas was persuaded to abdicate, and nothing legal, nothing founded on any constitutional or legal principle was put in its place. And the result was, because the constitution was torn up, legitimacy broke down. And Miliukov, the man who made that extraordinary incendiary speech, is it folly or is it treason? He set himself up as foreign minister of Russia. And somebody came along. He was, you know, when he went to meet the officials, they said to him, well, who appointed you? Upon what legal basis are you here? And he had no answer, because the whole constitution, the whole system of government of Russia was completely destroyed. Same again, we see with this misuse of impeachment processes, with these constant lawfare. I mean, lawfare is actually, there's actually a blog, and a very influential blog, by the way, in the United States, that calls itself Lawfare, and is all about using the law in effect as a weapon against the presidency, against Donald Trump. And again, it was this policy, if you like, this attitude that we will destroy everything in order to get at the Tsar, and then once we've got rid of the Tsar, we can take over. Only, of course, the Liberals found that they couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the Democratic strategy here is because they aren't speaking out against this violence at all? Do you think the strategy might be to just keep on ramping it up because they know they are going to lose? They've accepted the fact that they are going to lose if they go about it in a proper democratic legal way.
Yes.
The way it's always happened for hundreds of years in the United States. Yes. So they're saying, you know what? Let's continue to ramp it up. What we're seeing right now, this past week, what we've seen may be nothing compared to how it may escalate in the next month or two. But they may be saying, Alexander, let's push it till the damn thing breaks, and we'll force Trump to, quote unquote, let's use the word abdicate. Let's just say something like that. Maybe they'll steal the elections. Maybe they'll do the mail-in ballots. Maybe they'll do like what Al Gore said the other day, where he said, we'll get the military to remove him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're throwing a lot of stuff out there right now. So maybe they're trying to push the whole thing till it breaks, thinking in their head that they'll just seize power because they know they can't win with a free and fair election.
Yeah, well, indeed. Well, of course, and that is again a parallel, because the Liberals in Russia could not have won any kind of free or fair election in Russia in any way or shape or form, because they were a tiny minority of the population. And of course, they wanted disruption in order to basically, as I said, leverage concessions from the Tsar and eventually remove him. And it's interesting you mentioned the military, because how did they eventually force the Tsar, get the Tsar to abdicate? They got the military on their side. They spoke to various generals, and they said to the generals, the Tsar can't keep order. He's unable to maintain stability. He can't lead our country to victory in the war against Germany. He's obviously compromised with the Germans in some way. Wasn't true, but many people believed it. And what happened was, there was this a meeting between Nicholas and one of his generals, who spoke on behalf of the army staff. And in effect, it was the abdication, the Tsar's abdication, had elements about it, very strong elements of a military coup. After all this chaos had been created. And as I said, the liberals trying to manipulate things from behind the scenes. So there are similarities, because I too think that the Democrats are not going to win the election in November. I too think that the Democrats know they can't win the election in November. I too think that they are desperate to gain power. And I think that they, like the liberals in Russia, have a tremendous sense of entitlement in assuming that they should be in power. And I think also, again, like the liberals in Russia, they overestimate their own ability to control things, and they are far too complacent about the stability of their country. Because the United States has existed as a stable country for over 200 years, it had a civil war, but mainly it's been a very stable country, they assume that it always will be. And if they, you know, smash up the Constitution and get rid of Donald Trump and take over, it will continue to be stable. Well, the Romanov dynasty had reigned over Russia for 300 years, longer than the United States has existed. And again, that may have made some people in Russia in 1917 very complacent and assuming that it would, things would remain much as they had always been. How wrong they were. And I think the Democrats are wrong in the same way.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest weaknesses of this this revolution that the Democrats are leading and the oligarchs in the United States are leading and all these evil forces.
Yeah.
That are behind it. One of the biggest weaknesses they have is they don't have a face to lead this revolution, like a Lenin Trotsky type of figurehead that can lead this revolution. They kind of chose this Biden in the basement kind of character and this empty suit puppet, Kamala Harris. Mm. They don't have someone that can actually take on a Trump. You know, Trump is a larger than life character. They don't have the opposite so that they could push this terrible revolution through. Well, what do you want to make of that?
Let's actually now talk about some of the differences. First of all, American society is completely different from Russian society as it was. I mean, the Russian economy was a completely different type of economy. Russia was a predominantly peasant country. 87% of the Russian people were peasants. That's hardly the United States today. Also, I think that there's a fundamental difference in the sense that the American people, there are far more structured resistance to kind of revolutionary change than there was in Russia in the early 20th century. But, you know, you're also absolutely right. I mean, Karl Marx famously once said, you know, history repeats itself. The first time is tragedy and the second time is farce. Well, you know, whatever you may think of Lenin and Stalin and Trotsky and all those people, I mean, they were exceptionally clever and, by the way, exceptionally highly educated people. I mean, they knew what they were doing. They knew their ideology. They were, you know, in some ways very, very remarkable people. You look at the bunch that, you know, lead both the protests and the Democrats today. I mean, Sleepy Joe, I mean, he's going to lead a revolution. I mean, it's hardly bears thinking about. Kamala Harris, I mean, you know, are you kidding me? I mean, you know, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, I mean, she's the new, you know, Kollontai or you know, Clara Zetkin. I mean, it's just So, I mean, the idea that these people, you know, would be able to lead a revolution is just ludicrous. And can I just also say something? I mean, you know, again, if we're talking about parallels and differences, I mean, I've mentioned some of the similarities between Nicholas and the way Nicholas was treated and the way Trump was treated. But they could not be more different as people. I mean, Nicholas was a shy, diffident, very intelligent, highly educated man, but very shy, very diffident. He didn't really mix easily with people. He lacked self-confidence. He didn't dominate those around him. He just watched Donald Trump. You see how tremendously empathic he is, how he has this extraordinary ability to speak to the people of the United States. Nicholas had nothing like that. That was one of the reasons why he lost power, because he wasn't able to articulate his ideas in a way that the Russian people could relate to. He lost contact with them. Well, Donald Trump has certainly not lost contact, at least not with his very big and very enthusiastic electoral base. So I think, you know, that there are huge differences, but there are also, of course, striking and important similarities.
Yeah, absolutely. There are massive differences, but we need to always be aware as to what's going on and aware of how history has treated these types of scenarios so they don't repeat themselves in the United States. I think that's the important lesson here.
It's a warning. And as I said, it's also a sign. You must never be complacent about these things. I mean, both Alex and I have lived in countries which have seen massive political changes. We both experienced, coups. And Alex has, had the experience of a foreign invasion. We do not take stability for granted. We know that stability is something that can be shaken, and if violence takes hold, we know how dangerous that is. I think far too many people in the United States don't really believe that things can go badly wrong. Well, the answer is they always can. They always can. Somebody, and I forget who it was, once said that the price of liberty is perpetual vigilance. And vigilance about observing the Constitution, observing the rule of law, following due process, voting properly in elections, people accepting the outcomes of elections, and when other people start breaking transgressing those rules, a critical mass of the people coming together to protect them. That's how stability is maintained.
Yeah, we need to have perspective and look at just the last 3 to 4 months, how they've moved the goalposts. From what started out as the Floyd situation, the killing of Floyd, of George Floyd, we've now gotten to the point, Alexander, where they are executing people for just walking down the streets because they wore a patch that they don't agree with. Or they're going into the suburbs and they're screaming at residents or going to restaurants and shouting at people that are just trying to dine, trying to force them to raise their fist. We are one step away from this thing really turning very violent. And I really feel and I fear that this group of rioters and protesters and these mobs will now actually decide to go into the suburbs.
Yes.
And to just go full attack mode. Absolutely. And if that happens, all hell could break loose. But I do agree with you. I think the American people, there is the majority of the American people, I think, understand this or are starting to understand this. They're armed and they are ready for this. I really think that they are starting to get ready for the violence that may be coming their way. So, I mean,
My own sense, just to quickly say, is I think there's been a consolidation within American society over the last couple of weeks. And I think this is starting to be noticed even by the Democrats, and they're becoming dismayed by it. But of course, what that will mean is that the people on the streets, many of whom now are, past the point of no return. I mean, they've done things that they must be very worried about if, coming back to being held account for it. That the risk is that they will escalate, because that's also the dynamic of violence. Violence grows. Because if you stop, if you're into a round of violence, if you start killing people and bragging about it and celebrating it, then you're always afraid that you will be held to account, and that pushes you further to do more and more of it. So that's always the danger. Just finish by quickly saying the sense of shock and dismay that Russian society had in 1917. There's a very wonderful brief cantata a chorus work by the Russian composer Prokofiev called Seven. They Are Seven. It's all about the coming of the dark and terrible gods that bring destruction wherever they go. And if you want to hear that, you'll see what terrifying music that is. So please don't go there, America.
Yeah, I agree. And just to wrap it up before we get to the super chats, I want to stress again that yes, it is just a minority of the U.S. population that is that's rioting and that's doing these horrible things. Yes. But we want to stress the fact that back in 1917, though their name says Bolsheviks, they were the minority. Oh, yeah. And yes, right now in the U.S., it may be confined to a few cities. But as you pointed out, Alexander, in Russia, it was confined to pretty much one city. And then it just, you know, spread out of control. Sure. Absolutely. So we have that to ponder. And to the oligarchs and to the Democrats and to the mayors, you think that you can control the mob and they're not going to come after you. Sooner or later, Zuckerberg and Bezos and all the mayors, they will turn on you and they will come after you as well. You cannot control these people.
Of course not. There's a lovely piece of English doggerel. You know, there was a young lady from Riga who smiled as she rode on a tiger. They returned on the ride from the ride with a lady inside and the smile on the face of the tiger. That's what Zuckerberg and company need to bear in mind. Yeah. Not that they will, because they are incapable, I think, of imagining it. And that's the danger.
Yeah. The mob always turns in on itself. Always. Exactly. Always. All right. Anything else you want to add, Alexander? Before we
get we've covered a huge amount of ground in a very short time. So let's move forward.
All right, interesting conversation. Let's get to it from Triumph 951000 $5 super chat. Thank you very much for that super chat from Michelle Corley $5 super chat. President Ronald Reagan said the fascists will come from liberal parties because they believe in more government. The great Ronald Reagan. What do you make of that statement? Very true.
Well, there's this argument that goes all the way back to Hayek, Friedrich Hayek, who was the Austrian economist who always said, the road to serfdom, who always said, that it is in fact the growth of government that leads to fascism. So it's Reagan is in a long tradition, actually.
All right. From Sparky, $10 super chat. Globalist robber barons finance NGOs which support communist foot soldiers and useful idiots. These strange bedfellows have a shared goal of a borderless world run by central authority.
Very true.
Very insightful statement from Sparky. Again, a $5 super chat. George Soros is only one of the robber barons. Think of Soros as shorthand for the operation. George Soros puts a James Bond villain face on it. That is also true.
That is also very true. And it's a very important point, actually. I mean, maybe he gets almost too much attention and we ignore the fact that there are, there's a whole bunch of them, actually.
Yeah, hiding in the shadows. From Sparky, $5 super chat. NGOs should be treated as countries, especially when attacking countries. The U.S. and other countries should be able to declare war on some NGOs. Interesting point.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're finding in more and more places around the world is that some governments are having enough of the NGOs and are simply throwing them out or closing them down. Orban did that in Hungary, by the way. He threw out a lot of the NGOs from Hungary because he said, these are behaving in a completely, like countries, they're behaving in a completely aggressive way. They're meddling in politics in a way that they should not be.
Yeah. And the EU took offense to that.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. From Sparky, a $5 super chat. Tony Blair, Bill Browder, and George Soros and their ilk should be convicted for crimes against humanity in some sort of RICO way and be dealt justice.
Well, indeed. There's actually, I believe, somewhere, a film called The Trial of Tony Blair. I mean, I wish it happened, but it never has. And I suspect it never will. But I mean, all of these people have done terrible things. And in Blair's case, I mean, warmonger doesn't cover it. I mean, he was deeply involved in the wars and a very sinister figure, in my opinion.
And he's just become more powerful and more rich.
Absolutely. He's become far more powerful and far more rich. And it's become very clear over the last 2 years what enormous influence he has over the British Labour Party still, which astonishes me. And one of the things I discovered from reading a long article in the Financial Times was that he was basically the person who was instigating the second referendum campaign in Britain. Now, we thought that was the case. We said so in the Duran in programmes, but it was interesting to find it confirmed.
Yeah. From Sparky, a $2 super chat, free Julian Assange, in prison Tony Blair. Here.
Absolutely.
I agree with that one. From Sparky, $5 super chat, Five Eyes Intel and the military industrial complex works in concert, or at least in sympathy with the multitude of robber barons, Soros, and NGOs.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. From John Quinn, a $9.99 super chat. Thank you very much, John Quinn, for that. From Sparky, $5 super chat, some say Pompeo is a semi-closeted religious fanatic who wants to bring on the Battle of Armageddon sooner rather than later. Haspel's a warmonger.
I've heard this about Pompeo, that he believes in the rapture and that he's got these ideas. I don't know how far that's true or not. I mean, I really don't know. All I will say is he does take an extremely aggressive line on certain aspects of US foreign policy. But I personally think he'll be out of the... I don't think he's going to be Secretary of State for very long.
Yeah, I agree. If Trump wins a second term, Pompeo will resign. I think Pompeo is probably looking for a presidential run as well in 2024.
Yeah. Exactly. And I have to say, I thought his speech at the convention reinforced that view for me.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. From Alexandra, $4.99 to both Alexanders. Happy name day, Hronia Bola. Thank you very much, Alexandra. From Michelle Corley, a $5 super chat. Thank you all for spreading the truth. Thank you very much, Michelle, for that super chat. Edward Bernays, $4.99 super chat, kleptocratic corruption at the top, Dem and Republicans, two-party dictatorship, military-industrial complex, U.S. Treasury and Federal Reserve causes division, inequality, and violence at the bottom.
Well, much there I agree with. In fact, essentially, I do agree with it. I mean, there's an awful lot to unpack in that statement. Perhaps this isn't the life to do it, but, you know, all good points.
Yeah, we'll do some more videos on the U.S. Treasury, the Federal Reserve, gold, the U.S. dollar. I mean, there's a lot of stories there.
There's a lot of stories.
There. We'll talk about that for sure. From Triumph 95100, $5 super chat. Thank you very much once again for that super chat. From Bernard Hutchinson, $6.99 super chat. Do you guys see Salvini as Italy's PM? And do you think Italy will exit the EU, which is crippling Italy?
I think the answer to the first is very likely. The second is possibly. We will see. I mean, Italy's situation within the EU is unsustainable. It can't be maintained like this indefinitely. It's up to the Italian people to end it. One day, I am sure they will. Whether Salvini will be the person who will do it, we will see. I think he might be. I think, but you know, at the moment, he seems to be in some eclipse. But I think he will probably come back.
All right, from Kathy Alterman, $10 super chat. Are you afraid for the United States? From Atlanta, Georgia, USA.
Yes, I am afraid for the United States. And what started to make me afraid of the United States was Russiagate. I'm not going to beat around the bush. When I saw what is an absolutely transparent attempt by elements of the deep state, of the bureaucracy of the United States, to remove a sitting president from office with the support and collusion, I use that word, you know, carefully, and deliberately, of the media, the Democratic Party, and some people in Congress, and shockingly, part of the law enforcement bureaucracy and the judiciary, then I became extremely concerned for the United States. For me, the United States has always stood for constitutional government. The United States has the world's oldest constitution, and I never expected or believed that could happen there. If you told me that it would happen in other countries, you know, Turkey, Italy, wherever, all sorts of things happen. But in the United States, if things go wrong like that in the United States, then things are at great risk indeed. And there is a direct connection between that and what we're seeing in the cities of the United States now.
Mm-hmm. Right, right on, right on. It all started with Russiagate. From S. Zariel, CHF5. Guys, this has been predicted since well over 2 years now on TrueNews.com, who have been banned here. I watch you both daily. I do recommend them highly. Yes, that was a good YouTube channel, but I think now you can find them on BitChute True News. So yes, I also recommend them as well. From JHW, £2 super chat, liberals get the bullet too.
Mm-hmm. Well, they did in Russia. They certainly did in Russia. I mean, as I said, if you want to see what happened to most of them, it's really quite striking, actually.
Yeah, Yuri Bezmenov goes into that, how the useful idiots, they always kind of depose them after the revolution has been accomplished.
You see, the thing about these people is that they're never as clever as they think they are. So they always miscalculate. And in Russia, they miscalculated tragically and, of course, disastrously.
Yeah. From Sparky, a $10 super chat. Overzealous anti-bullying campaigns in U.S. schools in the last 30 years prevented socialization and gave us a whole generation of peculiar sissies who celebrate their flaws rather than overcoming them.
There is a book which I haven't actually read, which is all about this, which says that one of the problems that's happened in the United States is that there is this constant desire, which originated in the schools, to create safe areas, that everybody should feel safe all the time. And that meant that nothing could ever be said which was offensive or might upset someone. And that has, in effect, created an extraordinary culture of intolerance, which has led to much of this. I mean, I haven't read the book, and I I'm aware of the argument.
All right, from Vladimir Sirma, £10 super chat. Russian Revolution from 1905 to 1917. It's mostly was planned by Tsarist intelligence service. Future was for Russia turns into a UK French colony or create a newly reborn Russian Empire, USSR.
You know, the most interesting thing about, again, you know, we talk about deep states and parallels. Of course, the Russia before the revolution also had its deep state. And it's absolutely correct that many of the unions, many of the trade unions and protest groups, and indeed some of the revolutionary terrorist groups, I mean, one could go into, you know, find so many striking parallels, were actually controlled by elements of the law enforcement bureaucracy. One of the most successful terrorists in pre-revolutionary Russia was a man called Azev, who was taking instructions from one of the leaders of the secret police. And the reason this is all happening was because they had very much the kind of agendas that the person who's asked that question has said.
Interesting. One sec, let me find the next super chat. From Toilet Sauce, a €10 super chat. Protesters in Germany tried to storm the Reichstag. German media calls it an attack on the heart of our democracy. Protesters in Kiev pulled the same stunt 6 years ago. Back then, it was cheered on.
Absolutely. And of course, there have also been incidents in Belarus. So it's quite interesting to me, by the way, because we've covered the protests in Berlin. We've done a video about this. And in fact, more people were arrested in Berlin today, apparently, than have been arrested in Minsk, even though there's been a protest in Minsk. But no one, of course, will ever make that comparison. I mean, it's most interesting to see this. Protest in some cities is very bad. You mustn't do it. Storming parliaments is absolutely outrageous, you know. But, you know, if you do it in other places, well, you know, that's wonderful and marvelous and brilliant, and we encourage it in every way.
Yeah, the hypocrisy of it all. From Sparky, $5 super chat. Congressmen and senators don't denounce attack on peacemonger Rand Paul for fear of offending their sponsors in the military-industrial complex.
Absolutely. Well, I have to say, I think Rand Paul is somebody, both Rand Paul and Ron Paul, by the way, his father, I think they get under the skin of an awful lot of people, of these sort of people, because they say things which are not just true, but they do so from within a very powerful and influential American tradition. And I think that is one of the reasons why they're targeted in the way that they are, and why Rand Paul specifically was targeted in that way. Again, we've done a video about it.
Yeah, Rand Paul 2020. He's one of the good guys. Ian Simpson, NOK50. Is this a clever ploy by President Trump to make the Democrats unelectable?
Well, I don't think it's a clever ploy by President Trump. I think it's an incredibly stupid ploy by the Democrats, who are making themselves unelectable because they have become the party of disorder and a breakdown of law. And all over America, I mean, all those people in those restaurants who were being abused by Antifa, all these Antifa people, I mean, they must be absolutely shocked and very, very frightened and very, very angry. What do people who are frightened and angry do? They look to the person who they feel is going to protect them, who is the president, who is Donald Trump, who is the leader of the country, who is opposed to all these things. So I think in electoral terms, this is a completely misconceived policy. But, I come back to what I was saying. In some ways, it's also a dynamic of violence, which is now starting to build in. If it starts, it's very difficult to stop. In fact, it almost becomes impossible to stop. Certainly, it can't be stopped voluntarily. You can't just, pick up the phone and tell all these Antifa people who've been doing all these things, or people who call themselves Antifa, all these rioters, until the, stop rioting now, we don't need you to do these things anymore. I mean, these people are already heavily compromised by what they have already done. And they've developed a taste for this sort of thing. They're not going to stop simply because, well, Bezos or Pelosi or someone like that tells them to.
Yeah, I agree. Toilet sauce 5. Euro super chat. German MSM likes to pretend they are free and unrestricted, but it is clear to me they are tightly controlled.
I have many contacts in Germany, and I can confirm that, by the way. And in fact, there's even apparently an expression in Germany, the line media, which is often used because people are aware in Germany of how very controlled the media in Germany is.
True statement. All right, from Edward Bernays, $4.99, super chat. Come on, guys, you know full well BLM has been hijacked by people. Real BLM has offers solutions, not violence. Just civil rights movement of the 60s.
But this is not what we're discussing. I mean, we do not in any way deny in the Duran that there are huge structural issues in the United States and people have all kinds of issues. And, I accept personally, that there may be problems with militarized police forces and all of that. But this is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about people who are being who are all these mobs that are being used to carry out violence. That is undoubtedly happening, and that is the concern of this program.
Yeah, can I also just make a point here? Yeah. I've read BLM's manifesto, their charter, and it clearly calls for some violent acts to take place. I mean, they have it in writing. They have it in writing. They state it. Why put it in writing if that's not what you want to happen?
I mean, one of the things about BLM, which, by the way, always surprises people when I tell them here in Britain, very few people realize that there is actually an organization called BLM in the United States. But I seem to remember, and Alex, you will correct me if I'm wrong, or viewers will correct me if I'm wrong, that one of its founders actually said she's a Marxist. Well, yes. Marx said that force, violence, is the midwife of change. That's a quote from him.
Yeah, I mean, well, they call for the destruction of the traditional family.
Well, there you go. I mean,
among other things. So just read their charter. It's on their website. That's all you have to do, and you realize that this is not the civil rights movement.
No, it's not the civil rights.
Not even in the same universe.
No,
as a civil rights movement.
The civil rights movement of the United States, which I, by the way, remember. I mean, it was active when I was, it was peak when I was a child in the 60s, was a deeply patriotic thing in many ways. I mean, their whole point was, and I've said this many times in other programs, Martin Luther King's point and point of other civil rights leaders, was that they were setting out to make the United States that which the United States promised it would be, a democracy for all the people, government of the people, by the people, for the people, all the people. They wanted to fulfill, as they saw it, the promise of the United States. What we see today is an attempt to tear the United States down. It could not be more different.
Yeah. All right. From Sparky, a $5 super chat. Not taught in U.S. schools, but the U.S. deployed troops to Russia after World War I, but they couldn't figure out who the enemy was supposed to be.
This is entirely true. They did intervene in Russia, and they involved themselves in the Russian Civil War. And it wasn't just the Americans, the British and all kinds of other countries, the French too. And by the way, that was a terrible mistake. And it meant, for one thing, that Russian patriotism became energized. And that was one of the reasons why the Bolsheviks won, because they, whatever else they were also a Russian party in that sense, that they were defending Russia from people who were foreign invaders, as they argued it. But the whole story of the intervention is a very complicated one and needs to be, again, discussed in more detail in perhaps another historical program.
From Sparky at $5 super chat. The crazy talk reminds me of the era when Patty Hearst was kidnapped. It was Bill Ayers' heyday. He undoubtedly lends his experience in his old age.
I remember it very well, you know, the Symbionese Liberation Army and all that. The difference is that in those days, those groups were very much part of the extreme fringe of the 60s counterculture. There's nothing fringe about what's going on now in American cities. The people who are carrying them out have the backing of the Democratic Party behind them.
All right. From Alberto Diaz Saldana, $50 super chat. Thank you very much, Alberto, for that super chat. Thanks for your always on point analysis. Thank you very much, Alberto, for that. From JJHW, parallels between BLM, Antifa, woke culture, and Stalin's chicken story.
Stalin's chicken story is the one thing I'm afraid I think I know quite a lot about Stalin, but I don't know about any chicken story, to be quite honest. But there are similarities. I think also, and let's not overlook the Red Guards in China and this whole, you know, culture of, you know, people, you know, doing study sessions. This is going on very much in China at that time in the 60s. You know, teachers having to sort of carry out self-criticism and control their language and express themselves in certain ways and taboo words and all that kind of thing. The parallels are very, very alarming and very strange. And the way also in which the young and the idealism of the young is being used to attack the old. And you see that so
that is the breakdown of society. Absolutely. When the young attack the old. That is a scary yeah. thing to see.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's an excellent point. Yeah. From Toilet Sauce, €5 super chat. Is Trump the czar and Russiagate Rasputin?
Well, Rasputin was not what he was cut out to be. You want to know about Rasputin, there's lots of books now. The best, in my opinion, is by a man called Edvard Radzinsky, which is written from original Russian sources. Radzinsky is a very dubious character. I don't think much of him as a historian, but he's, you know, sometimes people produce a good book, and this is one. This is actually a very good book. So if you want to know about the real Rasputin, read that one. But Donald Trump is nothing like Nicholas II as a personality. Nicholas II had many qualities, but he was not a leader that led from the front, which Donald Trump is.
Yeah. From Sparky, $2 super chat. Shameless, in your face, election fraud is rampant.
Oh, true. I've no doubt. I mean, I'm sure it's getting on all over, and I'm sure that pressure to increase it will grow because, well, the polls supposedly are tightening. I don't think they're tightening at all. I think they're widening, because I think the Trump is ahead. And by the way, I saw somewhere today, I read that some think tank has adjusted the polls for the shy Republican factor, and has also concluded that Trump is actually ahead. Which is also Michael Moore thinks that too.
Nate Silver, I think, came out with the statement that the silent majority is actually Biden supporters.
Well, there you go. I think what it is an intimidated and increasingly angry majority, by the way. And by the way, I'm going to predict a lot of black people are going to vote Trump too in this election, because we're talking about, and Hispanic people, because we're talking about rioting. We're talking about shops and homes being destroyed. It's who is on the front line? Poorer people, but often very hardworking people, set up their own small businesses, their corner shops, their little restaurants, their bars, whatever. They are going to want to vote for Donald Trump because it is their livelihoods that are at stake.
Yeah, from Sparky, a $5 super chat. Insurrection Act can change some sedition charges to treason, because an insurrection is an act of war. Treason charges require a state of war.
I would need to know an awful lot more about the Insurrection Act than I do to be able to answer that question properly. I am aware of the treason provisions in the Constitution. But I'm not able to discuss that, because I just don't know enough about it. But it's an interesting, very interesting point. And it reminds me that I have to really study this act, because I suspect we're going to hear more about it. By the way, if Trump wins in November, as I firmly predict, and we see a massive explosion of violence after that victory, which I also think it's highly likely, we might indeed need to learn an awful lot more about the Insurrection Act then.
Yeah, from Finn Freak. Finn Freak says, wow, Portland mayor blaming Trump live at the Duran. Yeah, they've got themselves turned to
They did, absolutely. I mean, they've lost all touch with reality. They've lost all touch with the American people. They are confusing. The way they are talking is as if it is the American people who were rioting, or is it the rioters were the American people? They are not.
Yeah. From William Jones, $5 super chat. If things continue, I see dissolution of the U.S. along cultural and regional lines as a possibility. That might be the least bloody course. Thoughts?
Well, I think I would be desperately sorry, deeply sorry to see that happen, actually. I certainly do not want to see the United States separate or divide itself or states seceding. All I will say is this. Byron York did this extremely powerful analysis about how the Democrats might respond to a Trump win. And there was actual talk about them. You're trying to change the Electoral College and even do away with the Electoral College, and using the threat of secession by some American states, some US states, to try to force it. Well, if that happens, well, really, we are in a deep hole, because when that kind of language is used, when people talk about secession in that way, again, it's very difficult to stop, because the thing acquires its own dynamic and its own momentum.
All right. And we have another super chat from JHW on the chicken story. He says, the chicken story is Stalin plucked a live chicken and led it around by dropping food in front of it.
Well, there we go. Interesting story. I mean, Stalin was certainly someone with all sorts of ideas. I mean, he was probably somebody the Democrats need to start to learn about, because he famously once said that it doesn't matter who votes, it's who counts the votes that really matters. And I think that's absolutely what Schiff, Pelosi, and all the Schumer and all that crowd are thinking.
Yeah, I think they know Stalin all too well, actually, Alexander. They've studied him all too well. All right, from Michelle Corley, a $5 super chat. Executive action stops anarchy.
Yes. I mean, that's why, isn't that what the presidency ultimately is for? I mean, isn't the role of the president to maintain to preserve the Constitution and the rule of law, which is, you know, law, the foundation of law in the United States, is the US Constitution. So that is what the president is for. And that's what Lincoln, well, said he was doing. I'm not going to go into the history of all of that. But certainly that's what I think Trump is standing for in this election.
Yeah. From Toilet Sauce, a €5 super chat comment on Nazi thug squads in Ukraine attacking a bus with representatives of the opposition, killing at least two people.
Yes.
This is actually a video that we may want to
talk about. We will definitely
any quick thoughts on that, or do you just want to save it for a video?
Absolutely. No, I think we will save most of it for a video, but it's an absolutely shocking incident. And again, it's interesting that, you know, where real Nazi violence happens, it's not discussed in the media. People in the media in the West are very free about throwing the aspersion of Nazism all around to all sorts of people. This poor man was killed in Portland. I've heard people talk about him as a far right person, whatever that means. But, you know, when it happens in Ukraine, well,
Obama and Biden supported those very thug squads in Ukraine. So
exactly,
forget that. Edward Bernays, $4.99. After 70 years of empire, the U.S. is caught in its own Thucydides trap. Empires tend to collapse from within. This is America today.
Well, I hope it isn't. I hope that the United States rediscovers the Republic and forgets the empire, because I think that the American Republic still has much to offer. But, you know, I've read my Thucydides, and I know the point you're making.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hope they forget the empire and focus on the Republic. Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. Yeah.
That's a good point. From Finitas Barley, $4.99, the Kulaks are armed this time.
They certainly are. Absolutely, they are. And I mean, that's another fundamental difference, of course. I mean, you have an armed, well, not everybody, I think, in America bears arms, but lots and lots of people do, and they will use them to defend themselves.
Yeah. From Billy Bear, £5 super chat. Should Trump end protests with the National Guard, or just let it play? Or just let it play put, or let it play out.
He has to weigh this very carefully, and it's a political decision. I think in some ways, I mean, for example, I think he was right to sit back and let Chaz, that ludicrous thing in Seattle, play itself out. I think that did a lot of damage to the Democrats, and it vindicated him. But eventually, if things really go wild in American cities, the president and the executive have to step in. Yeah, I mean, you can't just sit back and let chaos prevail. I mean, you can't.
Yeah, agreed. It's from Sparky, $5 super chat. Real Americans will have had all they can stand, and they can't stand no more. Popeye style, spinach will come out. So watch out, soy boy commies. All right, well, enough said there. Excellent super chat from Sparky. JHW, a £2 super chat. See the killings of Tony Blair by George Galloway.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good. Yeah.
All right. From Connie C, $5 super chat. Is there a history book you recommend on what you discussed about Russia?
There are many. I mean, if you want to read about the liberals and the role that the liberals played in Russia, a very, very good book is George Katkoff's account, Russia 1917, which will show you how the liberals were acting. But if you want to get a really good feel for the sort of politics, in my opinion, the best historian around at the moment on this is Dominic Levin, who has written many books. He's written a very fine biography of Nicholas II, which you could certainly learn an awful lot from. But the best way to learn about Russia is to study its culture and its literature. Russians are very literary people, and Dostoevsky is a very good starting point, because already he could see these things building up, and you know, he was writing about them. And Chekhov, and also Gorky from the other side. So you know, you can read all these people, and you find out an awful lot. But Dominic Levin, he's the best historian, in my opinion, on Tsarist Russia.
All right, from Flying Boar, $5 super chat. Update on Navalny. What's going on in Berlin?
I would love to know. I mean, one of the things that I find really rather worrying about this is that apparently the man is still in a artificially induced coma. Why exactly? I mean, what kind of treatment is he receiving? We're told he's not in any danger, but they still haven't discovered this alleged mysterious substance that is supposed to have caused his condition. I'm starting to have doubts about that, by the way. But, you know, if you keep a person in a coma indefinitely, then all kinds of problems start. And I'm wondering how much longer they're going to keep him in this condition.
All right, from Life of Brian, 499. Do you see any movement in the empty-headed lawn care suburban professionals regarding the riots and the pandemic and what's really going on?
Any future?
Do you see any movement in the empty-headed lawn care suburban professionals regarding the riot and the pandemic and what's really going on?
I think what's going to happen, this is my own personal view, is that these people, I mean, the kind of people I think you're referring to are not going to change their views. And come November, they will have a shock. And then we will start to see all kinds of change. But they're not going to change their views. They will continue very much as the way that they always have been.
Yeah, I agree. You're not going to change their minds. From CC Jarvis, $10 super chat. Thoughts on Canuck Nations all implementing firearm and lockdowns simultaneously coordinated? Why? Thanks.
Well, I tend to take the view that they all did this because this is, you know, a health, there was this health thing. I'm not convinced that this is all a planned event because too many governments have too many different views have taken the same policy. And Russia did it. North Korea, incredibly, has done it. That doesn't seem to me to work as, you know, sort of planned thing. I personally think that lockdowns have completely exhausted whatever benefits they once had. The whole point about lockdowns was to sort out your health systems and sort out testing systems. If you haven't done that by now, then frankly, you're not doing your job as a government.
That's what they told us too.
That's exactly what they told us. So I mean, you haven't sorted it out. I mean, you know, we're now the end of August. This whole thing started in February and March.
Life of Brian, $4.99. The Lincoln Group seems designed to get some key neocons more control over the Democrats while others continue working through the Republicans.
One of the most extraordinary things, and we just discussed this recently in one of our programs, was this extraordinary alliance between the Democrats and the neocons. In fact, neocons and Democrats, it seems to me, they're now mated. I mean, they're essentially the same political force. And unfortunately, there are still these pro-war elements, neocon elements within the Republican Party too. Donald Trump has a lot of problems with the Republican Party. I mean, this ghastly report that the Senate Intelligence Committee published on Russiagate is an example. And the fact that the committee chairman, Senator, I think his name is Byrd, delegated it all to Warner, to Mark Warner, I mean, it's just stunning. I mean, it's as if Devin Nunes had left Schiff to do everything in when he was, you know, in the House Intelligence Committee. It's absolutely shocking.
Trump has more enemies within, if you ask my opinion.
Another parallel with Nicholas, by the way, who always also had the same problem. Exactly. Nicholas had so many. Nicholas, by the way, was so conscious of being surrounded by people he didn't trust that he didn't even have a secretary. He had to deal with all of his own paperwork because he was worried that if he delegated to a secretary, others would read it. And of course, we've had stories about people, you know, rifling through Trump's desk in the Oval Office. There was even an op-ed about that in the New York Times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very interesting parallel. From Flying Boar, $5 super chat. Update on Syria. A Russian general was killed. Turks and U.S. has something to do with that?
Probably is the answer. I mean, there's always these jihadi groups and, you know, one doesn't know. But I should say something, and this is something I discovered a while ago about Russian military culture, which, by the way, goes all the way back to Peter the Great and beyond, which is that Russian generals, unlike US generals, This is not, by the way, a comment about, you know, which is the better system, but Russian generals are supposed to go right up to the front line and expose themselves. It's a sense the Russians believe that this gives them a greater feel for the situation and for the battle, whereas Americans tend to think the generals, you know, are too valuable to be risked in that way. If you're going to train a general officer, you keep them out of harm's way so that they're there to make the decisions. I'm not a military man. I'm not saying which is the better system. But Russians are, as a result, always less nonplussed and shocked when one of their general officers gets killed than is true in Western armies. So I wouldn't actually think too much of this. Syria remains a very dangerous and violent place.
All right. See you later. $5 super chat. Can you give us an overview of who are the allies and who are fighting against each other worldwide?
Who are the allies and who are fighting against each other?
So the multipolar world, I guess, is what see you later means.
Yeah.
So who's on one side, who's on the other? US, EU, or maybe Russia, China, Iran?
Right.
I mean, what?
Right. I think we are living in, or still, what is still a very globalized world. I mean, if you go to, I mean, there's some countries, obviously, which, you know, are not part of it. North Korea is not part of it. We don't want to go discuss them. I mean, they're not. They're so far out of the way that they're irrelevant. But every other big country, China, Russia, whatever, they are part of a globalized world that was created in the 1990s especially. What I think is happening is that there is resistance in many of these countries. So there is resistance in Russia. Definitely. There is resistance in the United States. Absolutely. That's what Donald Trump is all about. There is resistance in Britain. That was what the whole Brexit movement was all about. And if you want me to say where is the heart and focus of all of this, where globalization is at its strongest, it's strongest in two places. I mean, among some of the people in Wall Street, but principally in the corridors of the European Union.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the City of London.
The City of London, well,
the City money,
London,
that's where the money is.
The money is, but the political focus. And in fact, there's a very interesting article by a journalist called Simon Tisdall in The Guardian, who's a strong believer in globalization, who says that, you know, with the United States, he seems to be accepting that Trump is going to win in November, by the way, which is interesting. But he says that, you know, with the United States misbehaving, that's how he puts it, the European Union should take over as the great guardian of globalization, which, of course, to a great extent, it is.
It already
but,
is, yeah.
I mean, the idea of the European Union is any kind of superpower. It's just...
All right, from JHW, the USA has not lost yet. Tim Pool has an AR-15. Thank you very much for that.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah, and Tim Pool has done an incredible job of covering what's going on. From David, $5 super chat, invaluable content. Guys, I've not seen or heard anything that makes such apt comparisons. The urgency of the situation demands that this video gets out. Please share, like this video. That will help the video get out. Thank you very much for that super chat. From Flying Boar, $5 super chat, Italy's economy is down. Is there a chance Italy will veto EU anti-Russia sanctions?
No, well, not with the present government. I mean, Giuseppe Conte just is the government that we have at the moment, which is the Conte government, you know, the five-star movement and the former Democratic Party. They will support the sanctions. If Salvini takes over, you know, it may change. But at the moment, they're not vetoing anything. They're supporting. I mean, can I just say, Conte actually called Putin after Merkel and Macron called Putin to complain to Putin about Belarus. Apparently he got a flea in his ear. There we are.
There we are. From Jonathan Gillespie, $2 super chat. Who are the useful idiots, Antifa, BLM, or globalists?
No, I think ultimately,
Antifa, BLM.
Antifa, I think, are Antifa, more, BLM, yeah, I mean, useful yeah, exactly, yeah. Useful. For the moment,
Yeah, they're the ones that Yuri Bezimov describes
in
his many videos. From Michelle Corley, $5 super chat. Thank you. BLM is an anarchist group started by ex-convict with old anarchist ideas.
No.
This is true.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michelle, for that super chat. Life of Brian, do you know the joke of Stalin and the sneeze?
No. I have heard a joke about Stalin and his pipe, but I've never heard of a joke about Stalin and his sneeze. The joke of Stalin and his pipe was that he lost his pipe and telephoned his chief of his secret police, who was a man called Beria, and then he fumbled around and found his pipe, which had fallen into the sofa, and he telephoned Beria and said, "Well, it's all right, I found the pipe." And Beria replied, "Impossible. Three people have already confessed to the crime." There you go. Apparently that is a real Stalin joke. He actually said it.
From Julie Butler, 999. We as Americans need to revive the Enlightenment idea stated in the Declaration of Independence in regards to the role of government.
Yes, I completely agree. Entirely
good statement. From Flying Boar, why not Trump just send a National Guard to Portland, Chicago, and Kenosha?
Well, I said, I mean, I think it is a political decision. It has to be very carefully judged. I think he feels as if he sent things in now, it might actually work to the Democrats' favor. They might say that he's actually inflaming the situation there. In fact, there's already an article, I read it in The Guardian, which is even the fact of Trump visiting Kenosha would apparently inflame the situation. So I think he has to make these judgments very carefully.
All right, from Toilet Sauce, Milo Dukanovic has been in power for 30 plus years. He has brought Montenegro into NATO and EU. After tonight's election, they will drop him like a hot potato.
I haven't followed the election in Montenegro. Obviously something I need to do.
We'll look at that, and we may actually do a video on those elections as well. For Michelle Corley, Lincoln used this act. First fire on the fort by Confederate soldiers. Trump can use the act he has just caused.
I stress again, I need to familiarize myself with this legislation. I think it's very important. It is remiss of me that I have not done so up to now, but it's good that you're all coming and reminding me of the need to do so.
All right. Thank you for that super chat. From Flying Boar, how will Russia deal with Nazi squads in Ukraine, and how will they win back Ukraine, and how will they win Ukraine back overall?
Well, I think that what the Russians are doing is they're playing a long game with Ukraine. And I think I've spoken to Russians about this. They're actually quite confident that eventually in time it will gradually drift back to them. But for the moment, they're building up Crimea. They're developing their ties with the two republics of the Donbass. And they've also redeveloped much of their economy, so that they're not dependent on imports from Ukraine in the same way that they were. And last but not least, their friends, the Chinese, are now negotiating to buy Mortisich, which is one of the big Ukrainian companies that makes gas turbines and all that kind of thing, which the Russians formerly use in their planes.
All right. From Edward Bernays, 499 Super Chat, Mr. Mercurius is clearly well-read, very sharp.
Thank you
for that. From Uber Pie, is a new member to the Durant community. Welcome, Uber Pie. From Gray Matters, $5 Super Chat. BLM, Antifa are terrorizing D.C. and plan a siege. Since D.C. is not a state, can Trump overrule the mayor and take over law enforcement?
I would have thought he could, actually. I think he probably could, actually. But I'm not familiar with the legalities of this. So I don't want to say definitely that he can.
All right, from Susan Wood, a £5 super chat. Lenin, Kerensky, and Protopopov were all born in the same town, Simbirsk, Ulyanovsk. What are the odds?
Well, indeed, remarkable. Ulyanovsk is still called, believe it or not. Ulyanov is Lenin's real name. Lenin is a name he had as a revolutionary.
Yeah, from Toilet Sauce, a €5 super chat. Navalny will stay in a coma until the next slow news day. Then he will conveniently die. Sorry to be so cynical, but I sense a pattern.
I'm afraid I'm equally cynical. I'm becoming ever more skeptical about this story. I mean, I really am.
Yeah, it is. It's a strange one. From Simon Ennifer, £5 super chat. How likely is a Trump assassination? Will it lead to a civil war?
Well, I desperately hope that isn't going to happen. And I'm sure every precaution is being taken. And I have great confidence in the, what's it called? The Secret Service. I'm sure they will act to protect the president. I mean, I think that would be an unheard of calamity if a thing like that were to take place.
Yeah, from Sparky, like every other CV in history, CV19SARS2 is just a cold. Like a cold, it can lead to pneumonia. We never shut down the world over a cold. Average CV death is older than life expectancy.
Well, I think it's not, I think we're certainly related to a cold. And can I just say all the, well, not all of them, but some of the vaccines we're hearing about are actually basically based on vaccines that use the common cold as its, as the origin, the base to develop the antibodies. I'm not a scientist, and I'm not going to discuss that in more detail because I'm just not able to, frankly.
All right, from Denny Prokopos, 1999. Thoughts on what is most likely to happen with the current conflict between Greece and Turkey? Well, we have a video on that coming up tomorrow, but very quickly.
Well, I think it's looking increasingly tense and increasingly difficult, but at least Greece has managed this time to get friends on side. And I saw a statement from the European Union where they were talking about sectoral sanctions against Turkey. That would be sanctions against whole sectors of the Turkish economy. The Turkish economy couldn't withstand that.
Yeah, I agree. From Gemini Z48, Australia and New Zealand had their guns taken by both governments after two massacres. People are worried about the future.
Absolutely, and so they should be. And can I just say, it's reassuring that people are afraid of the future, because if they weren't, with all of these things going on, well, that would be very worrying. I mean, complacency is the greatest enemy in these kinds of situations.
All right, $2 super chat from Sparky. Stalin must have published a joke book.
Oh yeah, he had a highly developed sense of humor. Not all of the jokes that are attributed to him did he actually make, but he was quite an interesting man. I mean, you read about him, you can read, there's an awful lot about him.
Right.
He was very self-aware. He knew exactly what he was.
Yeah. From Bad Luck Jonathan, 199, can there be an Eastern Orthodox king of Visegrad?
Visegrad is, Eastern Orthodox king, would have thought, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what this refers to be honest. Visegrad for me is a place in the Czech Republic. So,
can there be an Eastern Orthodox king? Oh, sorry, I read it wrong. Eastern Orthodox kind of Visegrad. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, right. Okay.
Sorry. It's late night here.
It's late night here too, actually. But yes, the answer is absolutely in the sense that my dog's excited. Can I just let him out a moment?
Yes, let him out. We'll take a 1 minute break as Alexander lets out his dogs.
Actually,
we're patiently both sitting behind you right there listening to this live stream.
Actually, they were both listening to the live stream. But what I was going to say was, I think it is entirely possible, in fact, very likely, that sooner or later, in some form or other, perhaps not in any immediate time frame, we will see the three Eastern Slav states, Ukraine, Russia, Belarus, come together again in some kind of association with each other. I'm not sure how it's going to happen, but I'm sure it will happen one day. Probably, definitely not within the European Union.
All right. Life of Brian, $4.99. In your view, how deeply does CNN suburban liberalism penetrate into the U.S. electorate?
I think quite far, but not as far as they think. And you only need to look at their viewing figures, which are abysmal. Compare CNN with Fox, and you get a much better understanding of who has the great attraction in America.
Yeah. Absolutely. From Julie Butler, $4.99. Do you think the flooding in China is going to make them even more dangerous or weaken the CCP?
So, I mean, the CCP has had to deal with many problems and crises before. They'll cope with this. If the Three Gorges Dam really collapses, then of course that's a very, very big problem, and it'd be very, very humiliating. But I was in China 3 years ago, and it seemed to me that they have the situation very much under control there through all kinds of methods, which I would certainly not want to see in the West.
All right, from Toilet Sauce Motor, Sitch will apparently not go to China for, quote, geopolitical reasons.
Probably the US objects. I'm going to make a guess that's what's happening. But anyway, the Chinese are big in Ukraine.
Yeah. From Sparky, the final Super Chat, $2 Super Chat, Congress is in charge of DC.
Okay, right. Thank you.
We have one more Super Chat that came in, yes. And we have one more from Bad Luck Jonathan. You think Ahmadinejad will win election next year in Iran?
No, I don't think it will be him. I think, and I certainly hope it won't, because frankly, I thought he was a clownish figure who I think managed to make things a bad situation even worse. But I think that the Iranian political establishment and elite, which still controls Iran, will not want to see him return.
All right, that is it. We'll wrap it up there. Alexander, a good hour and 40 minutes. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on this live stream. Have a really good Sunday and have a good Monday, a good week ahead. Let's see. Spartan Warrior Queen, thank you very much, as always, for your awesome moderation. And thank you to everyone who joined us on this live stream and to all the Super Chat questions and to all the comments in the live chat as well. Thank you very much. Please like this video, share this video. If you're not subscribed to the channel, click that little red subscribe button and you will get notified every time we push out a new video or have one of these live streams. We'll probably do a couple of more next week as well. Tomorrow we have a video coming out on Kyle. We did a really good deep dive analysis on Kyle, and we also have an update on what's going on between Greece and Turkey, which will probably be out on Tuesday. All right, Alexander Mercuris in London. Any final words before we sign off, Alexander?
No, it's been an absolutely wonderful program. As you probably realize, this is a subject which I'm very interested in. So it's been wonderful to talk about it, and thank you for your amazing questions.
All right, and America, take care. Please fight the forces of evil. Do not let them take hold. Okay. Duran mug, Duran shop. You'll see this is our USA Magic mug. All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Spartan Warrior Queen. Thank you to everybody. Have a really, really good Sunday and a good week ahead.